Hey
there, Hank. This your girl Dominique LeBlue. I am so glad you are on Anchor. Now I can listen to you while I drive. Anyways, much success. See you around. Bye.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? I'm glad you found your way in. You know who it is. It's your boy, Big Tank. Hey, coming at you with a little something new, and I'm very excited. You know what I'm saying? I'm very excited about this. As you see the name down there, Big Tank Hanks Wild About Herps. Yeah, I came up with a name. I think I'm going to let this thing breathe life all of its own. I'm going to find me another spot to actually stream these Wild About Herps, because it deserves its own space, you know, in the algorithm. You know what I'm saying? And tonight we got G.S. Snakes. My fault, G.P. Snakes. Messed that man's name up like that. Please forgive me, sir. G.P. Snakes. As y'all see, we on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Spotify. Thank y'all very much for coming through, spending a little time, getting some education on these ball pythons. And I got an individual here who he's pretty knowledgeable in this thing, very intelligent, you know, in regards to these snakes. And I'm going to let him tell you all about his side of this niche genre. I'm going to let him, you know, pour into you. Sit back, relax. Take this thing in, because we about to go on a ride. Gershon of G.P. Snake. Sir, I'm sorry about messing up your name.
I was like, oh, I already messed up my name. Hey, I understand. It happens sometimes.
and it's bad because I knew it. It hit me. I'm like, oh, no. Okay. Hey, y'all, this is new over here.
You good. You 100% good. Hey,
and I said that like I hadn't already been doing these. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Just want to say thanks for having me on. Greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, man, most definitely. Most definitely. Man, I've been looking forward. We've been moving stuff around.
Very, you know, true.
For a while trying to get this going, man. But, yeah, this has been a little old baby of mine that I've been trying to, you know, give birth to. And I see it moving around a little bit. I think it's starting to tease, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I understand you want to get into the herps, and this is a great way, is getting people that you are fascinated about and introducing them to you and talking to your audience as you grow and get into herping, which encompasses so many different types of animals in itself, and fish lends right into it. So that is a great way to do it. And like you said, you're not just one kind of tank, you're many tanks.
Yeah. Y'all heard him. We better do this thing. Sir, give him a little rundown of who you are, where you're from, how you got started, and then we just gonna dive on in this thing.
All right, sounds good. So I'm Gershon of G.P. Snakes, originally from L.A., Los Angeles, California, but now I'm in Wisconsin. My actual starting with reptiles actually started with a lizard that I caught, a wild lizard I caught myself. And like, I can't tell you what kind of lizard it was at the time because I had no idea, but I put it in the tank. I kept it for like 3 years, feeding it crickets and stuff, learned about reptiles, and eventually I let it back out in the wild, which probably wasn't the best thing because it had somewhat became domesticated.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I mean, I was still young at the time, so wasn't thinking right. But then that brought my fascination to reptiles, start learning about them. I had got into Chinese water dragons for a bit. And then I finally moved out my mom's house and I could get a snake. My mom was terrified of anything with no legs. She couldn't do anything that didn't have legs. So once I was moved out, I got my first snake and it was a ball python. And I just fell in love with ball pythons, started researching, learning about them, learning how to breed them, learning about the different morphs. And that's where that love just blew up. And I went from one ball python to 5 to 12 within like 6 months. And yeah, then I started learning how to breed them. My wife was at the time was my girlfriend, was like, hey, what are we doing? We got a lot of snakes. What are we doing here? Of course, I understood what she was saying. I tell her, like, I want to breed them. I want to give it a go and see if I can do it because I like it. And she was like, well, just don't get carried away. And that was enough for me to start get carried away. Went from 12 to almost 25 at that point. But then I started to get some breeding seasons under my belt, learning what I was doing. By trial and error, communicating with other people, learned, especially Facebook, YouTube. YouTube was a big educator for me, not only meeting people in the hobby, but learning about stuff. And then that's where I started my channel, start growing, started GP Snakes, started not only educating but entertaining people of my journey of breeding ball pythons. Then I started my podcast where I try to specialize in bringing other breeders on and enthusiasts of reptiles, big and small, and trying to bring the community together more. And that's GP Snakes in a nutshell: breeder, podcaster, YouTuber, positive influence on the reptile community, hopefully.
Amen. Now, from 12 to 25, was that your offspring or you were just still collecting them?
So some of them were offspring. Some of them were trying to get into certain projects, trying to get into get different morphs into my collection to be able to breed different things that I wanted to breed. So I would say more than half of that 12 to 25 were me acquiring animals to breed for future plans. When I first started out, I only had maybe 3 adult females that could breed and produce for me. The first year I bred, I literally got nothing. I only had 1 girl go and she slugged out. And I was just sad. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. That was the first time I was ready to give up on being a breeder and just decided to try to be a pet owner. After that first year, I tried again the second year and got 2 clutches of healthy babies, healthy eggs, produced babies, and got them to eat and sold a couple, and then realized, okay, maybe I can do this. But it definitely took a minute before I got my footing with breeding. As much as people say breeding ball pythons is easy, there is still moments of you have to learn what you're doing. It's not just an easy step-by-step necessarily. You have things pop up on you that you kind of learn by trial and error what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do in that situation. And there's still many different ways to do stuff. I try to let people know, like, there's not one way to take care of these animals. There are many different ways and types of ways to take care of ball pythons. The main thing is you want to make sure they're healthy, they're eating, and they're not stressed out.
Gotcha. 2 questions for those who don't know. And the first question, I don't know. Second question, I do, but for those that don't know, slugged out.
Okay. So slugged out means the female either lays eggs, there are infertile. Sometimes they have no veins in them. They look like regular eggs. They look like good eggs, but they have no veins in them. Technically, that's still an egg. We call it slug. Some people say that's just a bad egg. I call it a slug because it can't produce a baby. Then there's another egg that is like it's a lot smaller than an egg, but it's rock hard. You can't even look through it. That's definitely a slug. And sometimes there's been many different reasons why. Some people say either the female is not old enough, or the male wasn't old enough and didn't give good sperm, or the female's habitat was either too warm or too cold. So there's many different variations of why she would slug out. But that is something that you can't necessarily stop it. You can try to make your rack as on point with the heat humidity as possible. That's the only way you can do it. But even then, sometimes they still slug out. It's a little bit of luck of the draw, depending on the female, her age, the male you're breeding to, your environment. So there's different factors to it.
Is there a percentage? Even once you've been doing it and become well-versed, is there still a percentage of eggs that you're just going to get that's not going to be viable?
With more established females, it does, your percentage does get lower if you slugging out, because you know that female, she's used to breeding, she knows the process, and you also have established males that are used to breeding, used to producing good clutches. So it kind of varies between your females and your males, depending on your average of slugs. I tried to keep up with my slug average last year. I had one girl slug out, completely all slugs. Nothing in the clutch was viable. No babies were able to be produced from her eggs. But she was also a female I bought as a proven breeder, but she's an older proven breeder, so that could be a factor in that. And she also was breeding to a first-time male. He was a virgin male. She was the first one he was breeding to. So those are two different factors in that. I got a very young male and a very old female, which could have factored into her slugging out as well. Usually, your slug ratio to good eggs, I would say maybe like 20 to 15%, depending on many different factors of how you're breeding, the way you're breeding. Some people use heat tape. Some people use ambient temperature in their room, so their room is a certain temperature. So that gestation period of that mother producing those eggs before she lays it is even longer. So that could affect it as well. There's a lot of different factors.
Gotcha. Now, what constitutes moral?
Okay, so from my understanding, a morph constitutes from either a pattern change in the animal, either a pattern change or a color change in the animal. But then there's also a ability to be combined with something else to change it. So there's a yellow belly complex morph. There's a yellow belly, asphalt, and then there's a gravel. All three look exactly the same, but when you pair them together, they do different things with different morphs. So asphalt to asphalt to give you a different kind of super asphalt looking animal. A yellow belly to a yellow belly will get you a bell. Yeah, it'll get you a bell. No, ivory, sorry. An ivory, which is an all white snakes. So to constitute a morph, usually it's a pattern change or a color change in the snake. But then there's slight variance in that as well. It's getting more complicated because we found out now that there are, what is it called? So there's codom, there's non codominant, I forget how to pronounce it, but there's some that are non-complete dominants that make superforms, and some people consider those as recessives, just a different type of recessive. Recessives are visual morphs that have hets to them. So like albino is a visual recessive, but if you breed an albino to a normal, all the babies are het for albino. So they're not visually albinos, but they carry the gene for albino, and you have to breed a head albino back to either a head albino or a visual albino to produce albinos. It gets very somewhat complicated genetically. It's very hard sometimes to explain it, but once you figure it out, you're like, oh, this is how it's always been.
Are you saying you finally figured it out?
Exactly. And even then, there's some that are so like there's a gene, what is it called? There's an inchi and a cinnamon. You could breed them together and make cinnamon inchies. But if you take that cinnamon inchi and breed it to a normal, you will only produce inchies or cinnamons. You can't produce inchi cinnamons again from that. They're, I forget the word it's called, but they can't reproduce themselves. So some there's genes like that can't, that go together, but once they're together, they can't reproduce themselves again. They only can reproduce the two different genes they are. So they, if like a cinnamon inchi can't reproduce itself, but it can reproduce inchies or cinnamons. So you won't get any normals out of that clutch, but you can't get cinnamon inchies again. You'll just get cinnamons, and then you'll get inchies in there.
Okay, so in that combination, do you totally cancel out normal, like, period? Is that automatic, or?
Yes, an inchy cinnamon bred to anything eliminates any normals in that. So you won't get any normals out of that clutch. But once that inchy breeds to something else, you'll get a chance to make normals again. So they call it work like super. So like ivories, if you breed it to anything, you'll get all yellow bellies. All yellow bellies and plus what the mom or father is, but you'll get all yellow bellies. You won't get any normals, which is, some people love doing that, and that keeps you away from making normals, which normals are beautiful in themselves, but you usually get an excess of normals, which you sell to pet stores mostly, because pet stores usually need normals to new ball python owners usually buy normals first. So they have their place in this community as well.
So, okay, let's say, speaking of the yellow belly, mm-hmm. that you can still see normal coming, would the yellow belly create a different base palette per se? Like you still have normal markings, but mm-hmm. would the base be a different color, which will tell you, okay, the markings look familiar to you, but it's obvious that that's not a normal. You know what I'm saying?
So yellow bellies look very much like normals at times. They're high examples of yellow bellies and low examples of yellow bellies, easily confused as just regular normals. Yellow bellies have checker patterning on their belly most of the times, and some of them actually have yellow on the belly. So it takes a keen eye to know which is yellow belly and which is just normal. But asphalts look exactly like yellow belly, and you can't tell asphalts and yellow belly apart as of right now. Nobody has been able to have that eye to be able to tell them apart. You have to honestly either breed it out to figure out which one's a difference, or you can genetically check out their sheds. We have a doctor right now that is genetically mapping Morse by the sheds. So we're sending her sheds, and she's genetically testing the sheds to figure out what gene is in it, which is a huge thing for ball pythons, because we sell a lot of stuff as POS because we don't know if that gene is in there or not. We know the breeding we did, there's a chance that gene can be in there, but once you put so many genes into an animal, it kind of muddies it up, and you can't see the landmarks that you would tell by the animal for certain genes. So this being able to tell it by the sheds is going to help us not only not sell stuff as POS, but let people know exactly what they're buying.
Gotcha. Okay. One more. I said two questions and it rolled to somewhere else. This is originally the second question.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask this one, and then I'm going to let it go back to you and your personal journey as far as what you have, mm-hmm. favorites, what you're trying to make, you know, direction that you're going.
Gotcha.
Het hypo.
Okay. So a het hypo is, to get a het hypo, you would have to breed a hypo to anything else. It has to be a visual hypo to be bred to something to make head hypo. Head hypo is a recessive gene. So there's a visual recessive to it, and then there's hets that carry the gene forward. Hypo is actually, there's multiple different kinds of hypo, ghost, orange ghost, and now blue ghost is coming on the scene. So there's like three different, hypo and ghost are kind of the same thing, just got different names. Some reason it caught on a different name for some reason down the history of the gene. Orange ghost is a little bit of a brighter form of hypo. Still hypo as well, and they all, I believe, are compatible with each other. So you can breed an orange hypo to a hypo and still get hypos and some orange hypos in there, I believe. Recessive genes are, they're tricky because we have some people. So when you breed a visual recessive to a normal, everything in there is 100% het for that recessive. But if you breed a het to a het, you may produce visual recessives, but everything that's not visual is 66% pos het for that visual recessive. And then you even get, if you breed a het to a normal, everything in the clutch is pos 50% pos het for that recessive. Only way you'll find out is either genetic testing him or breeding it out. And if you breed and don't make any visuals, then that thing is not het for anything. It's just a normal. But some people take the chance on 50 and 66% hets and get it at a lower price that you would 100% het, and then get to take the chance to see if you breed and prove it out. And you can have an animal that was, you only pay like $50, now is worth $500 because it proved out. It can happen that way. Yeah.
So, y'all, I know in the ball python game, there has to be a class on humility. Because, I mean, one person can tell you this is this.
Yes.
And you just have to always be in a position of, I'm wishing, hopefully.
Yes.
You know, and I don't want to be sounding like, because, I mean, you have people right now, man, that like, I'm just speaking on the fish side. You know, they're experts. You know? Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's very little that you can do to prove otherwise.
Yeah.
Without just being a hater.
Yeah. So we have that, too. We have people that, There are sometimes markers for hets for like pie. There's pie track marks on the tail. They're not 100% proven all the time, but that is one way people feel they can kind of tell. Het clowns have some kind of marker. Some people say the white in their eyes or the white stripe through their eyes or the white tip of their tail. The way I, in the ball python community, that's one reason why I have my channel. So you can see what I'm pairing and you see what the offspring is. So you know, okay, I know he paired this animal to this animal. I seen this animal laying and on eggs. So when he opened these eggs, I have a better understanding of what he produced and what they should be. A lot of ball python buying, you're trying to make sure you get it from somebody that you can trust. That if they say this is het for this and they will stand by it, that gives you that trust to buy from them. There has been a lot of people saying something is het and it's not het. Those people tend to not be around too long in the community. They get kind of found out and they leave the community after they either scammed people out of money or people told them like, yeah, they're not selling actual hets and they're lying about it. But you also have to be patient with hets. Because you can have 100% hets breeding to another het and never produce visuals. But those could be 100% het. You could just not hit the visuals you want to hit. It's a gamble when you're breeding. That's the fun and the bad side of breeding ball pythons. Because we're always trying to hit those right odds to make the animal you want to make. Yeah.
Okay. Man. You're not releasing me, man. You're not releasing me.
I mean, I'm trying to be able to wrap up the questions to where you like, okay, that's good, but it does lead to other questions.
Okay. I told you I used to breed dogs.
Yep.
Okay. And let's go back to some of your terms. Let's say the visual side, not heterozygous. We're not even going to go into all of that.
Okay.
Visuals, when it comes to, I don't know if it's a mammal thing, more so because if you let a mutt sneak in, then the waters do become muddy and the genetics go everywhere. But when you're talking about pures, you can go on visual cue because you'll know what's dominant, what's recessive, and you will, for the most part, know if you use the Punic square, as they say, you know, you'll know, okay, this dominant brindle male to a fawn, black mass fawn female. You know that black mass fawn is a dominant because, you know, you saw that more than anything once upon a time. And the brindle is a dominant per se, but yet it's still one of those things that you seek after that you get a fewer number of. Unless the female has some brindle in her. But if I take that brindle male and that fawn black mass female, breed them, ergo brindle male, I know out of that litter, I'm going to get, if I get six puppies, for the most part, I'm guaranteed on that first breeding two brindle males. You're guaranteed it. Well, two brindle puppies. The second breeding with those two, you have a better chance of getting more brindle. So can you, with the ball pythons, can you say, hey, I'm just going to go on visual markers if you already know what's dominant, per se?
So let me explain it this way. So for recessives, you can have, let's say, pied. Pied is a recessive. You can breed a low white pied to a high white pied. You would still get low, medium, high, and you wouldn't get a certain arrangement of that. It's not a percentage that would happen. It's always random. 100% random. You can breed high white pieds to high white pieds, and you're more likely to get high white pieds. You breed low white pieds to low white pieds, you're more likely to get low white pieds. But it still varies sometimes. With the way your dog metaphor works for ball pythons, it would be, let's say you would have an Inchy and you would have a Yellow Belly. Both are dominant genes. When you breed them together, you will get, it's also a, you will get, what is it, 1.1, there's a 50% chance of Inchies in the clutch, there's a 50% chance of Mojaves in the clutch, and then there's also a 50% chance of Normals. So it comes out to 25% chance. And that the ratio you would get will also vary there as well. You would might get more Inchies in that clutch, or you might get more Mojaves in that clutch. Even with dominant, it's better to use a super. When you get a super Inchy to a Mojave, everything is Inchy in that clutch. Everything's Inchy in every like three or four of them would be Inchy Mojaves. So that way you would have to, you would guarantee yourself getting Inchy in that clutch. When you breed a single gene to another single gene, there's no great chance that you'll get either one of those single genes back. There's a percentage of numbers that you can go by, but it's up to God, honestly, with that.
Okay, so I think you just gave me some, okay. A super would be that brindle male. and that Fawn Black Mask, yeah. They will be both considered super.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So if when you breed a Fawn female to a normal and you get all Fawn females, that would be a super for ball pythons. Okay. That's how supers work for ball pythons.
Okay. Yeah. Man, this is
I mean, it gets genetically complicated. The further you get into it, the more genes you add to it. When you add supers, when you add recessives, some recessives actually don't work with each other and they can't actually reproduce each other. It's crazy. And we're still finding new genes out there. I think there's a new gene now that somebody's working on proving out to be a new gene. And he's not 100% sure if it's a codom or a recessive yet. Sometimes it takes years to find out which one it is.
Okay. Now, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to say this and then I'm going to give it to you.
Okay.
Because we're at the 30-minute mark and I need you to give me you.
Okay. Got you.
Okay. So, me taking a step back and not being so hard on those geniuses out there, experts, because if you can become pretty well versed in the basic genetics of ball python, I mean, it goes way beyond basic.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get the basic foundation and you work just within that, and you hit and you hit and you hit just within that, yes, you're working on a limited palette, but mm-hmm. you're hitting, it'll be real easy for you to think, hey, man, I have this down.
Very true. 100%. The thing with ball pythons is one Mojave could look totally different than another Mojave. There are certain landmarks you look for, certain identifying traits you look for.
Hold on. My wife just called me. I'm going to have to put you on here by yourself right quick.
No problem. So like I was saying, there are many different traits to look for in certain genes. And even the same gene can look different within its own gene, which it variates drastically sometimes. You can have a Mojave that looks completely different than another Mojave in the same clutch. It is drastically different sometimes. Even the guys that know genes up and down still have some hard times when you add other genes in there and you get variations of that one gene. So it can be difficult to nail down a gene. And sometimes you're better off making an assumption, but ultimately breeding that animal to find out what's in it and see what it produces.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. That was wonderful how that worked. That's the first time that just worked for me. Usually for call inter. Oh, man. It's a while. Maybe because I'm recording.
Okay, it right. is because you're recording, so it kind of stayed on StreamYard, so you're good.
Okay, all right. Man, I'm going to still have to go live. I'm not going to talk myself in there. Okay. Now, tell us what you're doing.
Okay.
Your favorites, you know, what you got in your room, you know, where you're headed.
Gotcha. So for me, what got me into ball pythons kind of in the first place was albino. I just fell in love with albino, the yellow, the red eyes. I just fell in love with that morph. So, of course, I wanted to produce that morph. So I work with a lot of albino in my collection. I also been trying to do this breeding pair to make albino clowns. So that is two recessive genes into one, which takes a lot of time because you have to make double hets and then breed those hets back to each other to reproduce and make visual double recessives. I've been working that project for 5 years now, and I honestly finally made one last year, but it didn't make it out of the egg. But I made one this year. I made actually three this year, and only one survived. And that happens sometimes. That's where you get with odds. And of course, this guy pooped, and he has poop on his head. So I'm going to just show you his body. The light is terrible in here, too bright. Let me take this down a little bit, see if that helps. This is an albino clown. It's not coming off the best in these lights. But he is a process of 5 years in the making. He actually only has one eye, but he is healthy. He's eating, and he will be breeding for me next season to try to up my chances of producing more albino clowns in the future and then adding other genes to it as well. I also work with different recessive genes as of such pied. I have this pied girl. We'll see if she bites me.
I can reach you.
Come on, girl.
There you go.
So I also work with pieds. Here we go. She is more of a low white pied, but I'm working on producing more of her, more clowns that are pied as well. Those are double recessives. And I also have a G-stripe. Go back inside. There you go. G-stripe and desert ghost. But of course, my favorite, one of my favorite morphs is Inchy. I work with a lot of Inchy. I love that morph. It's one of my favorite, and I try to put it in everything I have. So I'm trying to make a Inchy version of everything from albino to pie to clown. That's one of my favorite codoms to have. My favorite recessive is albino.
Okay.
Yep.
That's cool. So, pie, is that the white with the patch?
Yes. So, pied usually has white and it has patches of pattern here and there. You have high whites, low whites, and medium whites. She was more of a low white kind of girl. That's a visual recessive. They're very popular because they're very eye-catching animals. Great display animals, and they're beautiful. I can't help it. They're beautiful. And you can start put different patterns into them. You can make albino pieds, which are albinos with the white. Looks phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Okay. Inchy. What makes Inchy?
So, Inchy. See, this girl is actually probably shedding. Probably ovulating, actually. So, Inchy has these banded patterns. It also has this orange kind of glow to it. My camera's bad, so you can't see the orange as much. But this is a codom. There's actually a super Inchy, which gives it this, it gives it an arrowhead look on its head to know that it's super Inchy, and it reduces the pattern on the snake as well. Inchy is one of my favorite codoms. Love it to death. I will always work with Inchy in one shape or form in my projects. Just one of my favorites.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm a pied man.
I understand. Yeah, I can understand.
Yeah, I think I'm a pied man. That's something special right there. So, Ken, let me see. I'm doing it again. But I'm gonna ask anyway.
Hey, go right ahead.
Pied normal. Does that exist?
So technically, a pied is a recessive. So just a pied would be a pied. Normals are considered the normal is the base form for all ball pythons. Everything is normal first, and then it goes out towards other morphs. So pied would be just a recessive. A normal pied would just be a normal pied. It would just be a pied. You can have black pastel pied, clown pied, Inchy pied. Those are pieds with other codoms in them or other recessives in them. Pied would be the base form for pied, and then you add other morphs onto it.
Just the fact that it's separated by white.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it could be the normal coloration in the patches.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now pied because...
Yep.
because of the white separation, it's no longer normal.
True.
Boy,
true.
Look at me. Look at me talking ball pythons over here. And it's all right, man. This is all right. So, thoughts on Spider? Just came out of nowhere.
Oh, the Spider gene. So, I honestly, the Spider gene put ball pythons on the map. Because you got bumblebees. Bumblebees were the hottest things in ball pythons the last 15 years. 15 years ago, everybody wanted bumblebees. It's a beautiful morph. The pattern, the coloration, just phenomenal. It's eye-catching. But Spider does have a genetic issue where it corkscrews and stuff like that. Spider in ball pythons, as of now, people have been trying not to breed the spider gene as much because of the genetic issue. People say because it has that issue, we shouldn't breed it anymore. And I understand that, but you can't breed that genetic issue out, but you can make it to where it's not as significant in that animal. Don't breed bad spiders that cannot reroute themselves, that just have terrible corkscrews, can't eat. Those shouldn't be bred. But there are spiders that don't have that terrible corkscrew and can breed and can produce spiders that don't have that bad of a corkscrew and can live long lives. I do have Spider in my collection. I have one spider that is a butter spider desert ghost. I try to eliminate how many spiders I have to not breed them together, because spider to spider is a lethal combination. All the babies usually die. So I try not to do that, but I do like Spider and I do breed it on a lower scale just to make sure I'm not breeding them together or not producing too many of them. Because I want to make sure the animals I produce and don't plan to hold on can find homes. And if you have a lot of spider, people tend not to buy the spider gene as much. That means I would have to hold on to all those animals. And I'm not trying to hold on to too many animals. I already got a job here. I'm not trying to make it too much. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, you answered one of my questions I was about to go through. Because ergo the spider to spider. I'm like, even if they both seem good, you know, you're doubling up on something that could be hiding.
Yeah.
You know.
Most likely, every animal in that clutch will die. There is a super spider, but it's been produced, but I don't think it lived. It did not live. So it's there are like maybe 7 to 8 genes that you should not breed to each other that are lethal combinations that will kill all the babies. I can't remember off the top of my head the list, but it's like spider, spot nose, champagne, hidden gene Wama, and they all kind of have a little bit of the spider genetic issue in them where they have a wobble or they have this thing they do to their babies where they either give them like small eyes, their jaws don't form, or kinking issues. So you do have to do your research to find out what morphs can be paired to each other that don't have birth defects that will hinder that animal from either living or growing or thriving.
Okay. That's cool. What are your, from where you are right now, what do you see as the future? Like, what is it that you're striving for?
I'm striving to produce a lot of visual double and triple recessive animals down the road. We would like to produce like a world's first animal that's never been produced. I would like to do that one day. It's very hard when it's not that hard because there's so many different morphs. You can do it. It's very possible. But also I would like to have it to where my snakes can pay for themselves and they're not coming out of my pocket necessarily paying for, but I don't want to lose the love of producing these animals and work with these animals in the process of that. Of course, I am trying to make this hobby into a business for me. That's the plan. With with not only breeding the ball pythons, but also with my YouTube and my podcast, being able to have that all come together and become a business all in one, giving me many different ways to connect within the reptile community, but also help grow the reptile community in my own little way, do my own little thing to help grow it and bring others into the community and bring us more mainstream, but also just be a positive force within the community. I want to keep getting people excited for these reptiles, interested in these reptiles, wanting to keep these reptiles and learning about these reptiles. That's my whole goal, is to also educate on the proper ways to take care of these animals and not making people think there's only one way to do it. There's many different ways to take care of these animals and have these animals and be safe doing it.
Gotcha. Right now, in the mindset you have right now, what is a capper on the number of animals that you feel safe?
Okay, so I used to think about how many animals I could take care of when I'm healthy. And a friend of mine, Kai from Landon Lucas Worlds, told me, don't think about the animals you can take care of while you're healthy. Think about the number of animals you can take care of when you're sick. And that gave me a whole different perspective of how many animals I want to have in my possession and take care of at the same time. So for me to be able to take care of safely and make sure animals get attention, I think capping it out at 80 animals in my room with me working my full-time job, taking care of my family and the animals, I think 80 is the number I would cap out to be able to take care of properly, safely, and have them thriving. I think that's my number. And right now I'm at 37.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
39. So yeah.
So you got room. You got room.
I got room.
Okay.
I room. Now if I hit the lottery, that number would definitely go up. Give me a whole bunch more free time.
Yeah, right. I feel that. Now, do you have anything that represents what a spider is visually?
Yeah.
Because I've seen them, but you know, for the people that's listening, like, why are they talking about these spiders?
So this spider is going to look a little different because he is a... Hold on, let me try to turn some of these lights off. He is a desert ghost, but the spider pattern is 100% in him. So you see the webbing? That's what is considered spider. All the webbing in here, the way his pattern is. Spider is a dominant, very dominant gene. So when it gets paired to anything, you usually don't lose any of the spider pattern. It's always there. It varies slightly, but it's so dominant, it's always there. You usually can always tell a spider in the egg when you're hatching them out. He has this orange, slight orange yellow tint to him because he's also a butter. But then he has this brightness to him because he's also a desert ghost, which is a recessive gene. It's one of the hottest recessive genes out there right now. It is just growing in popularity. So it's starting to get hard to get. So I'm working on trying to produce my own desert ghosts. But as you can tell, he doesn't have any of that corkscrewness in his head. He rewrites himself very well. So he eats just fine. He can strike at prey items just fine. But yeah, that's the spider I have in my collection. Unfortunately, this dude is not doing his job and not breeding as well as I would like him to. So he's a first-time boy. So hopefully he'll figure it out pretty soon.
Okay, okay, okay. Now, I think with the two videos ago, did you pick up a leopard?
Oh, yeah, I picked up a leopard spot nose. Spilling water. Leopard spot nose pastel het clown. He's actually in quarantine, so I can't bring him in here. He's in quarantine, but he's a new project. The goal with that project is actually to make Batman's. So Batman is a leopard spot nose clown. So it's two codoms with a recessive on top. And of course, because I'm a nerd, I want to make Batman's because Batman is my second favorite superhero. So, but then I also want to bring that into albino.
I think I got every shirt in there, you know. Thanks to my children, you know. You know, when I was, I'm not a little guy, but when I was big, Tank Hank, you know. Every Father's Day, they was like, hey, Superman, Batman, yeah, thanks. I'm going to wear these shirts proud. Now I got so much belly down here. I feel like my church, though.
Yeah, I gotta go on a diet myself. I've been sitting around a lot. I got to go on a diet and start doing some jogging.
Right. All right, we're at the 50-minute mark. So, is there anything that you want to get out there for our newbies here? Like, I mean, I don't even know if I use the word newbies, because, you know, a lot of people that's going to be picking this one up, I mean, they're not even newbies. It's like, this is all super, super new, you know, not even interested per se, but will be after listening to this video.
True. I would say, if you're getting into ball python breeding, getting into any reptile, do your homework, learn about the reptile, learn about what it takes to take care of them, learn how long they live. A lot of people are surprised how long reptiles actually live. So learn about that. Find somebody that you either trust or can get to trust to mentor you. If you're trying to become a breeder, get a mentor, learn ins and outs of breeding. It is definitely worth having. I have a couple different mentors that I talk to on a regular basis just to pick their brains on stuff, because you can always learn something new. Never think you're going to stop learning or you've learned everything. Something new is always around the corner. And always have fun. Work with stuff that you're passionate about, because you're going to be the one cleaning that animal. And if you're not passionate about cleaning that animal, it kind of weighs on you and you kind of lose love for that hobby. So make sure you're working with stuff that you want to work with, that you enjoy.
Right. Huff's Herp has 2 20-plus-year-old ball pythons.
Yeah. Oh, and get on social media. You don't have to be on every one of them, and you just make your social media what you want it to be. You don't have to follow everybody. You don't have to do what everybody else is doing. But being on social media gives yourself a presence if you're going to be involved in this community. And it does open you up to other people to get to know you as well. So it's pretty important. It's not the most important thing, but it is important to have some kind of identity out there so people can see you, especially if you're going to start selling animals. People kind of want to know what you're doing.
That's you're speaking directly to me, because I, in the last 2 weeks or something, I've been follow. Facebook groups, dangerous subject.
Facebook groups, proceed with caution.
Yeah, I joined a few and I kind of tried to go along with the name. I'm in Houston, so I there was two that was like local per se. I did that just because, you know, that's they're around me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Instagram, oh man, follow. Oh my God, look at me, follow. Man, I'm gonna tell you, thank you very much for coming
on
here.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Greatly appreciate it. Had a ball.
Hey man, I really enjoyed it. Look, we're gonna be working together. I'm gonna try to make sure that we do that, man. So for one, selfishly, you know, you can help me get myself out there a little bit. But I mean, not just that. You know, a lot of people don't want to tell you the selfish side, but not just that. I mean, I learned so much just on listening to you today. I'm like, man, you know, the time and oh my God.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, let me leave him alone, you know, let him talk.
Hey, I totally understand.
How we started out, I was like, hey, you know, just you go ahead, you know, I'll sit back and you tell us. And then I'm like, no, I gotta ask that.
Hey, sometimes that question that you think nobody else is asking, go ahead and ask it, because you never know, six other people could be thinking about that same question. 100%.
Man, but yeah, this was beautiful, man. This was beautiful. And I hope to make this a big thing. You know, I want all, but you know, I'm not to mention chondros and you know, yes, all these things.
Chondros is a whole new world. I had a green tree python and an emerald tree boa. Loved them to death. But I realized once I got into ball python and start breeding, I didn't have the time to dedicate to those animals. So I had to let them go. Yeah. But yes, definitely beautiful animals as well.
Man, I saw this, and I'm trying to get out on a tangent again. I saw this purple snake. I saw this purple snake the other day, man, and I'm like, man, is that photoshopped? I'm trying to. Ooh. I still don't really know.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I'm gonna do me a little research. It's stuck in the side. I'm like, this snake purple. I'm trying to, you know, and it was a boa constrictor, but I'm gonna have to look into that though. Yeah, that's just a little something I didn't put out there. You know, I saw this and I don't know if it was actually real or not. The snake was alive. It was a real snake.
Okay.
But, you know, they could have did something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
This old computer is a wonderful thing, but it can also be...
Very true.
Yeah. You know.
Very true.
Well, all right, man. I'm at 56. Let me get up out of here before I shoot myself in the foot, because people have to see this.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, God bless you and your family, man. Much success. And we're going to stay in touch.
Definitely.
Hey, y'all, thank y'all for coming through. Thank y'all for checking out this stream. Questions, put in the chat, the comments. You know, we're going to do what we can do to get back at you. Tell them, what's your name on Instagram or on YouTube? What else, y'all?
GP Snakes on everything. You put GP Snakes into Google, you'll find me.
Gotcha. Yeah, let me get on out here, because I'm trying not to seem like... Okay. All right. Hey, be good. God bless. And y'all have a wonderful day, and you too, bro.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.